Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I hope you hope you're getting something out of the Game Changer, our Monday show, which is right now it's the special Game Changer, because I think it's imperative that I provide at least a very, very deep dive into what type of tactics and warfare we're really dealing with. And I'm just scratching the surface, folks. And unfortunately, I had a little bleed over on the Feedback Friday that I had to finish that up because I was talking about Tucker. Because I don't want necessarily people to hate these guys. I mean, they're smart people. And I have no idea where their heart is. You know, people, you know, can prove through their actions where their heart is. You know, money talks and whatever walks. But when we actually look at it in perspective, it's not about money talks. It's really about, you know, your works. What are you doing? And so forth. It kind of makes me laugh when I look at how complex we try to make things. As a long time ago, when I wrote my first book, I realized that we were heading down this path of fractionalizing all these different concepts and idioms or ideologies or philosophy, whatever you want to call it. As a matter of fact, there's capitalism, and then there's anarcho-capitalism, there's minarchism, and they're creating all these little caveats. You know, it's just like neocons and neophytes, and come on. There is really just two sides to this scale of liberty. And all of these people that are creating these names that create this nuance to define somebody doesn't really define them. And so I think we need to keep it simple. And I think we just really need to look at those who are champions for liberty and those who are champions for subjugation. And you have these different varying degrees of how far a person is willing to champion their cause. And so when you look at the diametrically opposing sides to this, you know, on the scale of liberty, a person, you know, would save a person, a person on the side of liberty would save a person's life when threatened, you know, because of their ideologies. But on the other end, you know, if you're a person that is, you know, supporting full subjugation, full enslavement, you cross that line where it doesn't matter. If you have to kill them, you got to kill them. The ends justify the means. In other words, it is a very dark and evil side when you go to that direction. And most people never get all the way over there, but it doesn't matter. They start drifting to where they're okay. And we're going to kind of, this kind of leads me to this Wyoming contention. And it's not just Wyoming. I'm going to give this one example because this is going to happen in every state. This is happening already. There are people that are in the liberty side that really don't belong there. They're there because they don't agree with the immorality of the left, but they do agree with some of the subjugation and basically allowing government to do what government wants to do. You know, whether you like it or not, they shouldn't be doing those things. They shouldn't be taking money from other people to give you a little handout. Now, this does not, again, when it comes to Social Security, this is not one of those things. Social Security was a big scam and it was a big lie, and people had paid into that all of their life. And so Social Security is one of the things that the federal government has to actualize. But most all of these other little things, a little handout here, a little handout there, or big handout one time, it doesn't matter. All of that stuff has to stop. All of that stuff, you have to realize that nobody's going to, you know, pave, or I should say, grade your driveway anymore because the federal dollars that come into the county, oh, well, we can do these things. if you want a nice driveway, then you're going to need to do that. It's not right that we're taking federal dollars to do that. Anyway, or even state dollars. It doesn't matter. Nobody should be getting services directly from government. Government's responsibility is to protect life and property, not to serve. And when you let them serve you, then they start ruling with an iron fist. Oh, but it's got a velvet glove. Anyway, so I like to have things simple. You have, you know, undetermined, you know, people. Let's just put it into the undetermined pile, right? Then you have good people. People that have actually stepped away from the undetermined people are just, you know, they haven't made any choices. They may not have biases, but that's not true. Everybody has their biases. We know everybody has their biases, but these people just have not determined, you know, because their life is all about, you know, whatever has nothing to do with government. There are government people or atypical type of person, like an amoral, a government, they don't even care. They don't care. Some of these people, you know, they're consumed by their sports. They're consumed by whatever is big and important in their life, whatever that is. You know, doll collecting or, you know, doing gaming. It doesn't matter. These are just the people that are just, they haven't woken up. Now, beyond them are those people who are actually pushing and supporting in different degrees subjugation. Then as we start coming across the liberty scale towards liberty, we actually start running into good people. Good people, you know, have the morals, and these are the people that are in our camp that, you know, may have some problems with fully supporting the eradication of all unconstitutional government. They'll go, hey, you know, but I like that. I kind of like them doing this. Those people are, you know, in other words, are they going towards liberty or are they going towards subjugation? Because bottom line, when you get to the full side of liberty, you have to turn your back on all of that. Government does not have that role. There are community services, churches, you know, other entities and organizations that are there to provide, you know, temporal support, physical, you know, compassion services, those types of things. Government should never be in that. That's one of the reasons why we hit the cod fishery bounties. And so, and this is all a part of the curriculum to help you understand all of this. That, you know, we need to hold government in check to those few limited objects. Now, a patriot, the next step over is a patriot, a person that, you know, we got to keep them within those enumerated powers. This is a person that is really close to the very end of liberty. In other words, they are champions for liberty, but there's actually another step within that white side. And that other step is a person of God. A person of God is not only a champion for liberty and ensuring that all people choose for themselves. God does not want us making decisions. I can't imagine him wanting us to compel or force anybody. He doesn't want us to go to war. He doesn't want us. He wants us to work out our differences and use logic and reason to be able to, you know, come to him. However, there are people that are allowing the evil influences to keep them from going there. But a person of God is a person of God that does more than just, you know, as a champion for liberty. I mean, they're that person that'll actually, when they're driving down the road and they see somebody in despair or something, and, you know, it either weighs on them or, you know, it's just they get this prompting. I need to pull over and help this person. And so that person right there, and they're a hardcore person of liberty. They're a hardcore patriot. They want to hold government fully accountable and our public servants fully accountable to the rule of law. What kind of person are you? I mean, there have been many a times where I've been driving that I really wanted to stop, but I just could not stop because I, you know, in the Marine Corps or at whatever points in time in my service that I was on, just can't do it. But there have been times when, whether I was in the service or not, you know, I would actually drive by, not really notice the person, and I go, well, you know what? And I see in the rearview mirror that person seems to be in desperate mode, so I would actually turn around and go back. We need to be that kind of person. We need to be compassionate towards people because there are points in time when people need us for something different, something equally important, some compassion. They may need to have somebody just do something because they're a child of God and they deserve compassion. And so that, my friends, is that person really in that Christ camp where they're supporting and ensuring that everybody has the opportunity to choose for themselves. America has the opportunity to fulfill God's, and I believe our Lord's desire in being able to make sure everybody can choose. And we're at the precipice on this earth. We're at the precipice on this earth of losing that and allowing people to go down these, and who are these people that do this type of stuff? These are the people that follow philosophers like Jordan Peterson, and they're good people, but they get immersed in all of these categories and all, it's really linear, folks. It really is. It's not, this stars going in all these different directions. Because bottom line, either you're moving towards subjugation or you're moving towards liberty, and you need to get on that path of liberty. And I'm here to help you. This is why we go through this curriculum. I'm not here to lead you. You need to lead. I can't do this. Maybe if if I was president, I could do that because I would have the position and the capability of doing that. But in any other position, I can't do that. And so let me just kind of dive into the Massachusetts debates. Actually, let me see here. I think that there's something else I'm forgetting. Okay, so I'm going to talk about really in the Friday feedback, we're going to get into AM radio and how it's under attack. And I just want to make one small note. A lot of people are, using this term. See, these are how we create these definers. This is a Substack. This person has a blog and they have all these links to all these other places and so forth. I used to do that. I used to actually send out an email in the early 2000s. It was called the Town Crier News. And I actually used to send out, all of these articles, like when Bush had opened up the silo or grain silage out of the CCC, the Commodity Corporation, the Commodity Credit Corporation, and that's where they keep the food reserves. Well, it's empty because of Bush. It's empty because the plan had already come to fruition that they started doing these things, and you're not even none the wiser. More people are complaining about the petroleum when the federal government shouldn't have done that, nor should they have had the silage. The states should have these types of storages. The federal government has only proven that they use these things as a weapon for political purposes, not for the intent of serving the people in times of need. That was the whole point of this. It's helping the economy. It's how they want to help the economy and moving it in the direction that they want to go. And the last time that they used the oil reserves was to help a tyrant maintain some type of control in Congress, which is why the gas prices have came down a little bit. But believe you me, it's not going to stay that way. It's not going to stay that way. And so because we don't want you traveling so much, you shouldn't be able to drive so much. We need to make it hurt to where if you're going to travel, you really have to use whatever leftover funding you may have or leftover income that, you're willing to save so that you can't do something else. Anyway, with that, let me just go ahead and get us back. And oh, by the way, so we typically, and the reason I was kind of talking about this, because, I had these ideas colliding in my head. I I'm not with Paul today, as you can tell, because I'm out here talking and doing this by myself. And so the reason I'm going to be reading and doing everything is because Paul is a man of God, because, you know, there's some friends of his that his wife has gone to help and he's up there with them and so forth. And I mean, this is something, you know, that people will do for family, but would you do it for a friend? Would you do it for somebody you really don't know? Somebody that you think you know, and you know, but they're really more of an associate, but they're a good person. That, you know, they're right there in that category, because, you know, we have to have these categories, right? They're a good person, but maybe they're not a patriot. It doesn't matter when it comes to compassion, and if you have the ability to do so, because, you know, nothing else is tying you down, then shoot, help somebody. Help somebody, make a difference, and let people understand that you chose to do that. You didn't need government to compel you to serve them, to give them some money, because that's the difference. When we start choosing to do good, we start moving away from just being a good person to be and being a good patriot to actually becoming what I would say a person of God. That's where we really need to go. And so I'm not here to save you. There's churches and ministers and people that are, you know, that's their focus. But I would be wary of the message if that person is promoting government assistance and those types of things, which is why you may need to just resort. You may not have a good parish, a good, you know, a place to go to worship. So start becoming one with God by just reading the scriptures and taking that time. It's all on you. You have to make this relationship, and it's all key between you and him, not me and you. So anyway, forgive me. I'm not trying to be rude. I just want everybody to understand that, you know, certain people have, you know, and I think my calling is to help educate and help point out what we need to do and where we need to go. Now, there are a lot of people that are subject matter experts. Like I just talking about Tucker and Charlie Kirk, they're obviously highly educated people. I went into this yesterday. So help me out here. You know, they may have a far better education than me. They may have, you know, all of this knowledge, but if they don't understand the Constitution and they don't understand, you know, how these things the government is doing in context to the Constitution, how unconstitutional it is that they shouldn't even be doing these things. They don't even have the right to do politics or making these things political. Then folks, come on. What the heck's going on? We need to start stepping up. Anyway, where we left off is the January 23rd, and this is, I believe, Mr. Wales is speaking. So let me see here. Nope, this is actually Mr. Parsons, and we just really didn't finish what he was what he had said. And so let me get into wrapping up what he said, and it'll probably take us the rest of the week, and I'm hoping that Paul will join us, but it doesn't look like he'll join us today or tomorrow. So diving into what Mr. Parson was saying of Newburyport, it has been objected that we have not as good security against the abuse of power under the new Constitution as the Confederation gives us. It is my deliberate opinion that we have a better security under the Confederation. The whole power, executive and legislative, is vested in one body in which the people have no representation, and where the states, the large and the small states, are equally represented. So in other words, the politics of the state is what was represented in the Confederacy, is what he's saying here. Even though they had representation in the Confederacy, it was equal, and it was the interest of the states, not the interest of the people. And so is a power to remove this. Okay, let me back up. The large and small states are equally represented, and all checks and states have is a power to remove, disgrace, or an unfaithful servant after the mischiefs of is perpetrated. Under this constitution, an equal representation immediately from people is introduced, who by their negative and exclusive right of originating money bills have the power to control the Senate, where the sovereignty of the states is represented. But it has been objected that in the old Confederation, the states could at any time recall their delegates, and there was a rotation. No essential benefit could be derived to the people from these provisions. Now, this is really talking about term limits. But great inconveniences will result from them. It has been observed by a gentleman who has argued against the Constitution that a representative ought to have an intimate acquaintance with the circumstances of his constituents, and after comparing them with the situation of every part of the Union, so conduct as to promote the common good. The sentiment is an excellent one and ought to be engraved on the hearts of every representative. But what is the effect of the power of recalling? In other words, you know, recalling your representative. Your representative with an operative revocation over his head will lose all ideas of general good and will dwindle to the servile agent attempting to serve local and partial benefits by cabal intrigue. I'm going to reread this. Your representative with an operating revocation over his head, in other words, he can be recalled, will lose all ideas of the general good and will dwindle to a servile agent attempting to serve local and partial benefits by a cabal and intrigue. There are great and insuperable objects to a rotation. It is an abridgment of the rights of the people, and it may deprive them at critical seasons of the services of the most important characters in the nation. It deprives a man of honorable ambition, whose highest duty is the applause of his fellow citizens, of an efficient motive to great and patriotic exertions. The people individually have no method of testifying their esteem hunt by a re-election. And shall they be deprived of the honest satisfaction of wreathing for their friend and patriot a crown of laurel more durable than monarchy can bestow? I'm kind of ending this one paragraph. What he's really kind of pointing out is that when you have term limits, when you basically have hard requirements that people must stop, there are many states that have this. This is really a terrible thing, because you can actually have really good people that are forced out, and all you got to do is wait it out because it doesn't give them the time to truly lead the change that needs to occur. South Dakota has this. Many states have these types of rules baked into their state house. This is not good, because what they're basically saying is that, you know, this government has a direction and it's going to take this direction, and we don't want leaders to come in and subvert the direction and get it back on track. In other words, when you create this type of ruling, it allows politics to enter, true politics to start entering, instead of actually holding people accountable. Now, he talks about recalling and the nefarious purpose of having that held over their head. But I don't think Mr. Parson is understanding the oath and the immorality that will creep into government, because I think he's basically giving them too much credit to not understand, you know, where we really are, you know, at that point in time with men of honor and integrity, and how over time that will get watered down. The erosion of character, it is always susceptible, and we had to have a mechanism. We had to have a mechanism to basically be able to hold them accountable and maintain that integrity and character. And within the Constitution, it really didn't have it. It had the oath, but it didn't have something to hold them accountable. The recall was a very arduous path. and why Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was the godsend. We'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just kind of move on to this next paragraph, but I hope you're starting to understand that even as these men, because I came to the realization that when I listened to what Madison was saying, Madison understood the nuances of the compact, the contract law, the parties, all of these types of things. He helped explain, and you know, as he did this, and as I discovered these things, it was just like this beacon pointing to how everything was rooted on basically common law. Because when we look at contracts, contract law is based on common law, and it is constrained into what is in the contract. In other words, contract law doesn't get involved in how you feel. It doesn't get involved in pain and suffering or a crime. It only says whether they can do it based on the contract, whether they can't do it. Is it in the contract? And fundamentally, that was the whole focus of what the Supreme Court was supposed to do. The federal court was basically just to look at the compact, and nine times out of ten, they should have said, this is not enumerated within this compact. This is not a federal court issue. And voila, it goes back. In other words, there's no standing. But what people try to do, like they did with election fraud, like they did with, you know, voter fraud, is an issue, making it a federal issue. This is where we become the enemy to ourselves, because we ask the federal government to do things for us when they have no authority to do it. It's just like South Dakota, who is, this awesome state, who really stumbled badly because it was South Dakota that created the standard. Remember, we didn't have to pay sales tax over the internet purchases. That came along because South Dakota, you know, was having a hard time enforcing the collection of taxes for people purchasing things over the internet. And they asked the federal government to step in, and the federal government happily did. This goes to show you how all we have to do is need a state or people to say, do this for us, feed me. That's not their job. When you need to be fed, you need to go to the church. When you realize your taxation process is not working, then we need to go to other means. And then we need to go to other ways of, you know, getting the necessary money to feed what government should be doing. But we have to keep government constrained on those two primary objects of protecting life and property, period. Moving on, Mr. Parsons says, it has been objected that the Senate are made too dependent upon the state legislatures. No business under the Constitution of the Federal Convention could have been more embarrassing than the constructing the Senate, as that body must conduct our foreign negotiations and establish and preserve a system of national politics, a uniform adherence, which can only induce other nations to negotiate with and confide with us. It is certain the change of men who compose it would not be too frequent and should be gradual. At the same time, suitable checks should be provided to prevent an abuse of power and to continue their dependence on their constituents. I think the convention have most happily extricated themselves from the embarrassment. Although the senators are elected for 6 years, yet the Senate, as a body composed of the same men, can exist for only 2 years without the consent of the states. If the states think proper, one-third of that body may be at the end of every second year. But new men, when the Senate act as legislators, they are controllable at all times by the representatives and in their executive capacity in making treaties and conducting national negotiations. The consent of two-thirds is necessary, who must be united to a man, which is hardly possible, or the new men biennial sent into the Senate, if the state chooses it, can control them. At all times, there will always be one-third of the Senate who, at the expiration of 2 years, must obtain a re-election or return to the mass people, and the change of men in the Senate will be so gradual as not to destroy and disturb any national system of politics. Now, I kind of alluded to this. I had no idea we were going to, you know, go down this path and diving into this beauty. But the 17th Amendment truly perverted this. And today, the Senate is actually answerable to the globalists. This is why both sides of the political control, when you look at Schumer, and when you look at, who's that, starts with an M, I think he's out of Kentucky, Tennessee. Anyway, you know who he is. He's, you know, puffy face. He's married, I believe, to a Chinese spy or what have you. McConnell, anyway, bottom line, these men are controlled by the deep state. And you can see the direction of how, while under these men, there may be some real limited things McConnell's willing to do, he will never defy the hand that feeds him. Which is why you can see how he is corrupt, because there have been proven ties between his wife and him, you know, with the Chinese. And I'm just saying, the Chinese and the globalists own our Senate. Our House of Representatives is a little bit different, but there is still a lot of money going into those races. They'll never get to a point where they can own every race. They don't want to, because these greedy tyrants, I was going to use another word, I figured I won't be so colorful. These greedy tyrants that are controlling our government actually only want to control the key players to make sure, or they have, you know, a certain amount of control that's necessary. And this is where they actually use the party. And remember, there are two parties. There's two Democratic parties. There's two Republican parties. There is the grassroots party, and then there is the political party. And they use the political party to control these guys, because all they have to do is allow the power to a very few, and you've created a cabal. And he talks about the dangers of these types of things. This is very specific, very specific. But the whole point is that, unfortunately, Mr. Parson hasn't pointed out that these men are not answerable to their constituents. It's one thing to understand what they need to do, but they're constrained by this thing called the enumerated powers. Maybe he didn't fathom that eventually people would want the government to feed them. Madison knew. When he was talking in the cod fishery bounties in 1792, he pointed out that if we go down this path of using taxation to provide for all things, we're going to take over religion, we're going to take over education, we're going to take over welfare and all manner of things. And everybody was aghast. No way, we can't get there. We know that we can't get there. But Madison knew that once they started using the purse to do that, and that would be crossing the line of staying within its enumerated powers, and that they would make these political compromises and the people would be willing to let them do it. And that right there, friends, is that maybe that good person that's really moving towards subjugation, because they're not willing to give up these government services that government shouldn't be doing. And to me, that will be our downfall. That will expose the soul of America, that, you know, what's in it for me? The greed, the avarice. I don't want to do this for myself. I know as you get older, life gets hard, especially as you stop losing. You're no longer able to work and become retired or what have you. All of a sudden, you know, the aged and infirmant or what have you, you become controlled or owned, because now you're dependent on this beautiful system of welfare, Social Security, and government handouts. And I'm telling you, friends, there's going to be many people. It's one thing to save Social Security, but to save everything else, no. And as a matter of fact, we can prove that we can do much better. Once we actually stop taking all of the money from government, that money will be freed up so that you can contribute it to the church, and the church can actually start engaging and helping, you know, older people earn money. We have to get away from this idea that you can't work until you're 18, that young kids, getting rid of the minimum wage, will allow young children to actually be able to start earning some money. In the national average of the minimum wage, it's $7.75 or $7.50, something like that. But when we look at certain states like Washington, a kid is earning on minimum wage basically $16. What a disparity from the national average. That's more than double the national average. And they're working on getting it to triple. There are these blue states, and what they're doing is they're creating a paradigm in the kids that they deserve that kind of money, doesn't matter what they do. And that is destroying the work ethic and is creating an entitlement state on steroids. So, you know, we need to actually start understanding how important all of these things are. Mr. Parson then moves on and says, it is objected that it is dangerous to allow the Senate a right of proposing alterations or amendments in money bills, that the Senate may by this power increase the supplies and establish profuse salaries. And and for these reasons, the Lords in the British Parliament have not this power, which is a great security to the liberties of Englishmen. I was much surprised at hearing this objection, and that the grounds upon this, which it was supported. The reason why the Lords have not this power is founded on a principle in English Constitution that the Commons alone represent the whole property of the nation, and as a money bill is a grant to the king, none can make the grant but those who represent the property of the nation. And the negative of the Lords is introduced to check this profusion of the Commons and to guard their own property. The manner of passing a money bill is conclusive evidence of these principles, for after the assent of the Lords, it does not remain with the clerk of the Parliament, but is returned to the Commons, who by their Speaker present it to the King as the gift of the Commons. But every supposed control the Senate by this power may have over money bills, they have without it, for by private communications with the representatives, they may as well insist upon the increase of supplies or salaries as by official communications. But had not the Senate this power, the representatives might take any foreign matter to a money bill and compel the Senate to concur or lose the supplies. This might be done in critical seasons when the Senate might give way to the encroachments of the representatives rather than sustain the odium of embarrassing the affairs of the nation. The balance between the two branches of the legislature would in this way be endangered, if not destroyed, and the Constitution materially injured. This subject was fully considered by the convention for forming the Constitution of Massachusetts, and the provision made by that body after mature deliberation is introduced into the federal Constitution. Then he goes into this next objection. It was objected by that by giving Congress a power of direct taxation, we give them power to destroy the state governments. By prohibiting them from raising any monies by this objection is not founded in the Constitution. Congress have only a concurrent right with each state in laying direct taxes, not, I want you to hear this. This is direct taxes. In other words, in the Constitution, it's called duties, direct taxes. Now, how many people do you know say that the Constitution did not allow for direct taxes, that the 16th Amendment is where direct taxes were invoked? See, they're actually saying direct taxes, where but it was to the state apportioned by the people. It was equally apportioned per person. What Wilson did with the 16th Amendment, because he actually didn't play with the uniformity clause. He didn't even touch the uniformity clause. He said, because bottom line, Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 1 states right there that it must be uniform across the union. So if they're going to tax people, it has to be uniform. Well, it's uniform if we tax by income base and charge different people different amount. No, it's not. Uniform means that every person would pay the same thing. Not every wage earner would pay the same thing. And that's how perverted this whole concept got. Anyway, moving on. Let me see. Let me back up to where we were. In laying direct taxes, not an exclusive right, and the right of each state to direct taxation is equally extensive and perfect as the right of Congress, any law, therefore, of the United States for securing to Congress more than a concurrent right with each state is usurpation and void. It has been objected that we have no Bill of Rights. If gentlemen would make this objection, would consider what are the supposed inconveniences resulting from the want of a Declaration of Rights, I think they would soon satisfy that the objection has no weight. There is a single natural right we enjoy uncontrolled by our legislature that Congress can infringe? Not one. Is there a single political right secured to us by our Constitution against the attempts of our own? Excuse me. By attempts of our own legislature, which are deprived by this Constitution? Not one that I recollect. All the rights Congress can control, we have surrendered to our own legislature, and the only question is whether the people shall take from their legislatures a certain portion of the several sovereignties and unite them in one head for the more effectual securing of the national prosperity and happiness. The Honorable Gentleman of Boston has had at large most of the checks the people have against usurpations and the abuse of power under the proposed Constitution. But from the abundance of this matter, it has been my opinion, omitted two or three, which I shall mention. The oath the several legislatures, the executive and the judicial officers of the several states take to support the federal Constitution is effectual a security against the usurpation of the general government as it is against the encroachment of the governments. For an increase of the powers by usurpation is as clearly a violation of the federal Constitution as a diminution of these powers by private encroachment, and that the oath obliges the officers of the several states as vigorously to oppose the one as the other. But there is a check founded in the nature of the Union superior to all the parchment checks that can be invented. If there should be a usurpation, it will not be on the farmer and the merchant employed and attentive to their several occupations, it will be laid upon the legislatures, completely organized, possessed of the confidence of the people, and having the means as well as inclination successfully to oppose it. So in other words, the only way the federal government could actually start encroaching upon unconstitutional powers is by getting the states to go along and letting them do it without an amendment. And that is how it happened, folks. Our state legislatures literally opened the door for the federal government to come in with money to feed them. In other words, they used money to get the state legislatures to say, okay, you pay us and then we'll go along with you. So who was really the culprits here? I think there was equal sin on both sides. The want and the avarice of the states and the greed and power-hungry federal government trying to pull in more and more controls. Anyway, under these circumstances, none but madmen would attempt a usurpation. But, sir, the people themselves have it in their power effectually to resist usurpation without being driven to appeal to arms. You hear me say this all the time. An act of usurpation is not obligatory, it is not law, and any man may be justified in his resistance. Let him be considered as a criminal by the general government, yet only his own fellow citizens can convict him. They are his jury, and they pronounce him innocent, and all the powers of Congress can hurt him, and innocent they can certainly will pronounce him if the supposed law he resisted was not an act of usurpation. So this right here is really, 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 really important, because what we want to do is highlight how one of the things he missed of the check is that who has to enforce the laws of the Union. This gets exposed in Virginia, where it's we the people. It is the militia that has to execute the laws of the Union. So why would we execute unconstitutional laws? That's a good question, GR. We wouldn't, unless the states allowed the federal government to create standing armies of law enforcement like the ATF and like these other agencies. And this probably got, you know, they were successful in doing this because most people didn't realize that the execution, those who actually enforced the Constitution, was to be the militia. Constitutionally, it is the militia that must do this. And this was clearly put into play in the Virginia ratification debates. Even though he missed it here, it was still caught in one of the states. And the fact is that the federal government cannot treat one state differently. How every state contributed to containing the federal government, even if they were the only state to do it, it contained it for all because of uniformity, and that the federal government could not treat any state differently. So as we move along and as we go down to our next issue, it comes down to guns. And this is Mr. Dawes makes this one short little oration. Observed upon the authority of Congress to raise and support armies, that are the objection to which had been made against standing armies were inapplicable to the present question, which was that there must be an authority where to raise and support armies, whether the authority ought to be in Congress, as Congress are the legislature upon the proposed plan of government, in them only as he should be lodged the power under debate. Some gentlemen seem to have confused the idea about standing armies, that the legislature of the country could not have the power to raise armies is a doctrine that he had never heard before. Charles II in England kept in pay an army of 5,000 men, and James II augmented them to 30,000. And see, this is where I'm talking about. And they were using these men to enforce the law. This occasioned a This occasioned a great and just alarm through the nation, and accordingly, when William III came to the throne, it was declared unconstitutional to raise or keep a standing army in time of peace without the consent of the legislature. Most of our own state constitutions have borrowed this language from the English Declaration of Rights, but none of them restrained their legislature from raising and supporting armies. Those who never objected to such an authority in Congress as vested by the old Confederation surely ought not to object to such a power in Congress. There is to be a new branch of representation arising immediately from the people, and which branch must alone originate those very grants that are to maintain an army. When we consider that this branch is to be elected every 2 years, there is a great propriety in its being restrained from granting any grants in support of the army for a longer space than that of their existence. If the election of this popular branch were for 7 years, as in England, the men who would make the first grant might also be the second and third for the continuance of the army, and such an acquaintance might exist between the representatives in Congress, and the leaders of the army might be unfavorable to liberty. But the wisdom of the late convention had avoided this difficulty. The army must expire itself in 2 years after it shall be raised. In other words, it must expire. So there you have a clear stipulation that the existing army cannot operate for more than 2 years. So in other words, if there's a need, because we have to keep the warfare going, then these men that are engaged in the war have the option of leaving, and the states or the Congress will have the power to call forth, you know, augments or a new body of men that those who are in service do not have to stay. Because that's what he's saying here. He is saying that the army must expire of itself in 2 years after it shall be raised. So in other words, if they want to stay, they can, but they don't have to. That other men of their country or other men from their state must, you know, then step up to replace them. And the state must be compelled to provide for those people. So the way I would work it is identify who wants to leave, because there are going to be people that say, you know what, I think I'm doing something really important here. I want to stay. So they can voluntarily stay. But if you have to replace everybody, then you start doing it so that it's transitioned, where you don't necessarily replace the whole army. But having this check of making it expire is the way to go, because that's the way the army is supposed to be. The fact that we have a Department of the United States, we have the Department of Defense, and then we have a Department of the Navy. That right there is constitutional. But the fact that we have a Department of the Army as a permanent standing, that has a permanent army that men are serving sequentially, is absolutely unconstitutional. The same thing with the Department of the Air Force. The same thing with the Department of Space. These three branches have no constitutional standing. They must expire every 2 years. The fact that there are people that are working in these branches that are, you know, have worked and obtained a career, this will piss off all sorts of generals and politicians. I'm sorry. You happen to be in a branch of service that actually was designed to maintain, you know, this homeward feel, that the focus was the states and the states' militia, that they were to execute the laws of the Union and not to fight perpetual wars within the United States or to support unconstitutional laws, as we see in these standing armies. We will be back tomorrow with more. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.